No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Jess Root from Revenge of the Birds Radio, and we have our end of season review show. I'm on the line with Seth Cox from Revenge of the Birds, one of our writers there, but also the one of the hosts of the Draft Breakdown podcast. And this is the time of year when, if you haven't already started, you should probably get to know him and his buddies on the Draft Breakdown podcast. You can find it on iTunes. You can find it on SoundCloud. That's how I listen to the show myself. But Seth Cox is on the lines. How are you doing tonight?
Good, Jess. How are you?
Doing all right. I think I finally come down and accepted the Cardinals lost. I've been able to work through it, and I've now officially moved. If you noticed on the site over at RevengeTheBuck.com, our great SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, that it took me a little while. I didn't jump right in. Previous years, I would just jump right into that off-season stuff, start reviewing the positions, end-of-season award polls. I couldn't do that for like a week. And I finally got it out of my system. And now I've accepted how the season ended, and I'm ready to move on, looking forward to the off-season and the seasons to come. So I don't know about you. It took me... It was hard for me to move on from the season because it was so great.
It was fun, and the way it ended was, I think disappointing is really the only way to explain it, because I don't think shocking or anything like that does it justice, because I think we all had such high expectations, even if they lost, which, I thought they were going to lose. We talked about that on the podcast.
Yeah.
I don't think we didn't see that coming. Like, there was
there
was just no way to see the Arizona Cardinals going on the road and basically looking like they didn't belong. I think that was the hardest part, was because they literally looked like they didn't belong on the same field. And I don't think we expect that from the Cardinals.
And even during the game, early in the game, especially with the narrative about Carolina and their leads, how if they get up to a lead, they kind of let the gas off. There was always this feeling like, okay, here it comes. Okay, here it and it never happened. It was just down the tubes. But we're moving off. We're past that game. We flushed the toilet. We're done with the game. The Super Bowl is happening this week. We talked about last week. We talked about the Super Bowl matchup. Maybe we'll react to that in the weeks to come. I don't know. But we're talking Cardinals. Again, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. This is our season in review award show, looking forward to the off season. If you haven't found RevengeOfTheBirds.com, you need to. It's the best Cardinals fan site. It's a community of Cardinals fans run by Cardinals fans, and with a little bit of a perk of the fact that I myself, who run the site, I do have media credentials, so I do get a little bit of insider perspective as well. This Revenge of the Birds Radio show, you can, if you aren't already subscribed to it, you can get to it from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, Stitcher Radio, iTunes, or Blog Talk Radio are all different ways, and soon to come, Google Play Podcasts, it will be on one of the podcasts there as well. Seth Cox is our draft guy and film breakdown guy, co-host, and you can talk to him on Twitter at SCoxFB, as in football. Myself is at Senor Jess Root, SenorJessRoot, or at Revenge of Birds, and of course you can hit us up at Facebook at facebook.com Revenge of the Birds. So let's talk about this season. There's not much to talk about right at the slow point, because everything's all about the Super Bowl. But we're starting to go back, at least on the site. I've started the process of having the fans vote on okay, who was the defensive MVP? And let's do this. We're going to talk about the season awards. So we're going to go through the MVP on both sides of the ball. We're going to go the rookie of the year on both sides of the ball. Who is the best new addition, the best regular season win, the best play? And then we'll go all kind of the not-so-good set. What was the biggest disappointment in terms of players on the team? So let's start. Offensive MVP is probably going to be an obvious one, but let's hear your take, Seth. Who would be your offensive MVP for the Cardinals this year?
I think the obvious is Palmer, but I'm going to go to a different route and say it's Larry Fitzgerald. And the reason I say that is because we saw in the Green Bay game, and we even saw in the Carolina game, the Cardinals' ebb and flow of their offense and their ability to put up big yards and big numbers really hinged on Larry Fitzgerald's involvement and his ability to kind of space the field for the guys deep. As John Brown and Michael Floyd were this year, they both struggle in the sense of making catches not in space, so to speak. So, and Larry's still kind of the go-to guy. And so I think for me, his, you know, rejuvenation and his work that he did this season, kind of earned him that spot. And anybody that wants to give it to Palmer, I completely understand. But I think you take Larry off the offense, I think it'll have the same type of impact as if you were to take Carson offense. Outside of the fact, I think that Carson would probably still throw for close to 4,000 yards, but they don't have the efficiency and the ability to quick strike other teams.
Good choice. I'm going to go with the cop-out pick, Palmer, just because, oh my goodness, where'd the Cardinals be without Palmer this year? Although I will highlight some if you want to call them unspoken MVPs, and that's the combination of Chris Johnson and David Johnson because of their impact on the running game and therefore impact on the offense, because what Palmer was able to do in the prolific offense that they had this year, better offense than we've ever seen any Bruce Arians team, better offense we've ever seen in any Cardinals team, and it was because of the balance offensively. Chris Johnson, who really took, and I actually wrote about it. I went through the season review, talked about the quarterbacks, wrote about the quarterbacks, running backs on Tuesday. It's Tuesday night's when we're recording the show. And we saw the best Cardinals running game in terms of production since 1988. And they had a great running year, even though it was disappointing on a lot of facts. But it went from player to player. Andre Ellington started the year well. Then Chris Johnson, who really kind of established the Cardinals' running game as something for... I'm not going to say he was the MVP, but he was a very, very important piece of that offense because Andre Ellington went down early. And David Johnson, I don't know if he would have had the impact early on as the workhorse as he did later in the season. So Chris Johnson comes into play right there, and then David Johnson, obviously, at the end of the year. His dynamic play really set the standard for the rest of the offense. It was that running game that really set the passing game up to be so prolific. But literally the best quarterback season we've ever seen ever in the history of the Cardinals. Palmer set records for passing yards, touchdown passes, passer rating. He had the second lowest interception percentage in team history, and the only interception percentage that was better was Palmer himself in his six games last season. Palmer is definitely the MVP, but I wanted to point out those unspoken or those perhaps underappreciated contributions from, especially from a Chris Johnson who wasn't around the team the last several games.
Yeah, I think Chris Johnson's portion gets undersold because something we talked about early in the year was the fact that keeping the offense on time and on schedule, that was something happened because of Chris Johnson's productivity and the ability to take the run game seriously. You look at even the Seattle loss or the Seattle win where they really didn't do anything in the run game until that Ellington Was that a run even? I can't even remember.
It was, yes, because it was the speed draw play that you were basically calling for when we were at your house.
Oh, that's right. It's been so long.
That was forever ago.
But, I mean, you look at that game, and, yeah, I mean, he kept that defense honest for the most part. And so I think that, you know, I think it's a really important point because he did not have a season like David Johnson that was flashy and big numbers and, you know, long runs and things of that nature. Instead, he had a workman-like season where you could just count on him to go out there and roll out, you know, 70 yards on, you know, 18 to 20 carries. And that's honestly as good as David Johnson was. The Cardinals don't need that to have a great offense. They just needed Chris Johnson. So, you know, I think that's what made the end of the season with David Johnson so special and then so disappointing, you know, in the end, because it went from, we don't really need the running game to be great, to, man, if we could run the ball, this would be great. So it was interesting how it came to an end and the impact, you know, or the lack of impact the last couple games that the running game had really shown through. And I think you know, that's very important, like you said, to acknowledge the Johnson boys and what they did all season.
Going to the defensive side of the ball, let's take a look at the MVP candidates. I want to go, you know, someone with I think most of the fans on the defensive MVP poll said that it was Tyrann Mathieu. And you cannot understate how important he is. But I have to bow two other players as my MVP. One is Patrick Peterson because of what his skills did this year. He took such a step up and basically eliminated a portion of every team's offense they faced. And that ability made things so that James Betcher could do other things up front. When you take out one receiver and of the perhaps the most important receiver of every team, guess what? That gives you that defensive quarter, makes their job easier. However, as I'm going to lean more towards Deone Buchanan because of what he did statistically and what he meant in terms of flexibility. He really didn't get enough credit nationally for what he did statistically. He was credited for, like, the team. If they go by the coaches' count, he had tackles. He had three sacks. He had the interception and a touchdown, three forced fumbles. And really interesting stat, really incredible stat, is the fact that Deone was one of only two to record over 100 tackles, three sacks, intercept a pass, and force three fumbles. It was he and Thomas, the best linebacker this year in football in terms of production. And Deone's really still not considered a linebacker. I mean, he's still a safety, listed as a safety, and now a money backer, how you want to do it, but he's kind of a new thing. But you take him off that team, and I think it changes the dynamic of that defense greatly, simply because that's what they needed. They needed that speed in the middle of the field.
Well, and to be completely frank, he's the only, I mean, and this is going to, I don't know, whatever, I'm just going to say it. He's the only good player in the linebacking corps. Like, he's the only good player. Like, Mentor is
solid.
Average.
He's solid.
Yeah. Golden was average. And Okafor and, you know, Freeney and none of them, you know, Freeney did more than we expected in the sack department. I think we can all agree with that.
But and that's not, all he was brought in to do.
Yeah. But he's not an every down player. He's not a guy that, you know, you're going to lean the defense on. And Okafor was a disappointment this year. So, yeah, I mean, honestly, he was the only good in that linebacking core. So I think that's a completely fair pick. I'll cop out this time. I thought it was Tyrann Mathieu. And I think I tweeted it in September. And then, you know, I continued to tweet it every year or every month. And then I tweeted it even after he was injured, but I think he's the best defensive back in, you know, Earl Thomas, very good. And, you know, Josh Foreman had a great season. A lot of guys are really good. But Matthew does so many things in so many places. And, you know, as good as they played against Green Bay after his injury, they played that badly against Seattle, Green Bay again, and then clearly Carolina. So I don't think his can be understated. And now the hope is how, you know, healthy is he going to be coming off his second knee, and it's the other knee, and, you know, all that good stuff. So, but I think Tyran is going to get that. I tweeted out before. I think I said 5 years and $65 million, with like 30 guaranteed. So, and I think that's going to make him the highest paid, you know, quote unquote, in the league. But I think that's what he deserves because he's probably the best defensive back in the league, and that's all you can, you know, ask for. Now the question is, are you going to be able to get that 100% back, or is he going to be, you know, 85% to 90% of the player? So let's hope it's at least that, because he's something special.
He is, and interestingly enough, as we move forward, as we talk during the offseason, whatever happens with the safety, the two technical learning safeties that could be starting next year in Matthew and Buchanan will probably not play the majority of their year at that position. An interesting thing that happens. Obviously Matthew, where he's special, is playing in the slot, and then Buchanan, for as good a safety as he could be, I don't know if he'll be any better than what he was as a linebacker this year. And he was pretty dang good. Let's look at rookies of the year on both sides of the ball. Offensive rookie of the year. Is it any doubt of that you can give it to anyone other than David Johnson? I mean, that one's a pretty obvious one. That's just a no-brainer. One, because, you know, in terms of offense, they had DJ Humphreys. Nice redshirt season. They had David Johnson. They had J.J. Nelson. J.J. Nelson had an impact, but this one's easy. David Johnson is definitely the offensive rookie of the year. And actually, because they're kind of limited on both sides, let's talk rookie of the year overall. I still lean towards David Johnson, though I give both Rodney Gunter and Marcus Golden a definite nod to the contribution. Even though David Johnson didn't have a big role early in the season, his production from week 1 to week 17, even in a very limited role early on, was crucial. And he got the flashes to see that he could be something special down the road.
Yeah, and I think when you look at it, you have to kind of consider what does David Johnson do in a full season? I'm not sure he puts up the numbers he was going to or he was on pace for, because, one, the rookie wall, but two, because I'm not sure that this offensive line was as good as we had hoped. So I think that's, you know, I think the rookie wall is a fair thing to bring up. So I think his numbers were skewed in a good direction for Arizona. Nelson, you know, he had one like great game, and then I think one good game, and then he was just kind of there every other game. I think if he would have actually had any impact in the return game whatsoever, this would have been more of a discussion. But he didn't, right? Like, he didn't at all.
And then that's what when he was drafted, everyone was like, all right, there's our returner. And it turned out that he actually had a role on offense, because based on his 35 catches at UAB, no one said, oh, he's going to make a nice addition to the offense, and especially at 138 pounds.
Exactly. So I think overall rookie of the year has to be David Johnson, partially because of what happened at the end of the year with the defense and how they fell apart. And that's not Gunter or Golden's fault. Again, rookie wall, I think, is part of it. But I thought that the failings at the end of the year probably outweighed the good that they did at the beginning of the year. And then, you know, obviously David Johnson was vice versa. It's kind of like college football. You know, if you lose early, it's okay. You can't lose late. And the defense lost late. And David Johnson made a huge impact late. And so I think that's fresher on everybody's mind.
All right. Let's move over to the best new addition. We have guys. You have some key guys that we added. You've got the rookies that we could count in this category. Mike Iupati, Corey Redding. Corey Peters obviously didn't make any sort of real impact. Dwight Freeney. Who would be your top newcomer this year?
I think it's got to be Iupati. I don't know. Like, everything that we were expecting to happen, you know, kind of didn't happen, except for he being really, really good. Right? I think Redding had a nice season, and then I think that obviously, Corey Peters got injured again, so you have to hope that he's going to be okay.
Weatherspoon, you know, did nothing. Else?
Yeah, and Freeney, like we talked about earlier, like he did exactly what you wanted, but his impact overall was kind of limited to those like end of the game sacks that he had, really, and that's not a bad thing, obviously.
Which was really impactful, honestly, but yeah.
Yeah, it was a very limited impact, as opposed to Iupati, who, you know, just go back to that first Seattle game, when he left, the inability to run the ball shone through completely.
Well, and you look at it, in fact, what was the big knock on him? He can't pass protect. He wasn't a stud at pass protection, but he was probably the most consistent pass protector the Cardinals had on that line all season.
Yeah, and I think that's more of a, and this isn't a shot at Iupati, because, you know, like we said, that's not his strong suit at all, but shot at Jared Valdir and kind of the slightly disappointing season he had. If anything, he regressed to the mean. Like,
right,
his 2014 season in Arizona, I think, was more than we should have expected. And I think his 2015 season is what he was in Oakland and why they were willing to let him go, you know, without franchise tagging him.
Although, you know, Carson Palmer sort of alluded to it. The way that Valdir played more down the stretch, you have to wonder if there wasn't something going on physically. Palmer made the comment how Jared Valdir definitely deserves to be a Pro Bowler, this and that, and it doesn't get any help. He plays through things. So I wonder if there's not something there that he wasn't completely healthy down the stretch. But, you know, and I didn't mean it to be I didn't mean it to be a shot at Valdir, rather. He had a little bit ups and downs, but that Iupati was much better in pass protection than anyone said he was. And there might have been some credence to the fact that his foot bothered him in his last year in San Francisco. Now, the thing where he gets nicked up, that's a little bit of concern, because he had some things. He had the knee and he had the shoulder. But still, my goodness, he was really, really good. I want to give an honorable mention to Dwight because of the type of impact that he had. Very clutch plays down the stretch when the Cardinals needed it. The thing is, the guys that they were going to, if we look back to the offseason, Sean Weatherspoon was supposed to be a great addition. And then he did nothing, and that was he loafed at it, and I get the impression that because of the injury history that he had, he was kind of just sort of loafing it through training, trying to make it to the season, and it bit him in the butt because that hamstring bothered him all camp. And while he was on the sideline on the training table, Minter stepped up and Buchanan became really good.
Yeah, and I think that the disappointment kind of stretches in the fact that he wasn't able to make any impact at all. And, you know, so they had to play Deion there again. But I think, you know, overall it was.
Yeah. Let's look at in terms of the best regular season win. When we talk about some of the best play, the best regular season win, just regular season, the best win of the year for me, I think you have to point to it as great as that opening week win against New Orleans, or the complete domination of San Francisco the next week, or the complete unraveling of Philadelphia and Green Bay. I still look to Seattle game as their signature win on this season that really put a stamp on what the rest of the season was going to be like.
I don't know. I don't know. That's just, it's funny. I don't even know what to say, to be honest. All right, next subject.
They had some good wins. I mean, when you look at, especially when you the second half of the season, the win against Minnesota was good for the type of game it was. The Seattle win, the Green Bay win, which was all sorts of fun. Then you had the Philadelphia win. Those playoff type atmospheres down the stretch were fantastic. We look at kind of one final thing in terms of the good. What would be, you know, we're going to take the playoffs off the table, because obviously I think the biggest play of the year would have to have been that Larry Fitzgerald play in overtime. But if we're talking about the play of the year, what would you give that? Of all the good plays that there were, what would you give that to be?
Since you reminded me of it, I think the speed draw. Because I think it was a lot of things. It was a combination of showing that the Cardinals could not only play but win. And then I think it was a combination of getting that kind of monkey off of Palmer's back of big game choke artist. And then I think it was a combination of seeing what this Cardinals team at full tilt could possibly be. And that all kind of came together in that game. And then that play itself, you know, the enjoyable Drew Stanton memes afterwards. And just it kind of was a microcosm of what the season was. Really, really, really exciting and fun. And, you know, and that's all you could really ask for.
And that would be, that is such a great play, and I probably should say the same thing, but the one that I think that impacted me the most in terms of what happened was the knee sack strip sack to end the Minnesota game, because that was a playoff-type win. It was a Thursday night against a very physical Minnesota team, a weird game, and that win, that play, kept things from unraveling, because there was still this talk of like, yeah, and it kind of built up their momentum after that. I loved the Ellington. That was the kind of the cherry on top of that win. And what the interesting thing is that play wasn't the clinching. It was the locking play. But you had several plays. You know, the Jermaine Gresham catch in that Seattle game. We've got the, you know, which one of the sacks at Favre. You could even say the Justin Bethel interception of Aaron Rodgers in that game sort of turned the tide in their favor. You could go with one of the David Johnson runs, the beast mode run as well. But I'm going to go for the Freeney strip sack just for what it meant, because it won the game. And it also kind of kept them rolling in that stretch of games that they were so dominant in.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good one, because I think it, again, was kind of the microcosm of who they were as a team this season, that they struggled to put teams away that had any semblance of ability, so to speak. Like, I mean, Minnesota was a playoff team, and they are Blair Walsh shank away from being the going on to play the Cardinals. So who knows what happens from there? So yeah, I think it just kind of was what they needed at the right time, and it was a different guy stepping up, and I think that was kind of what this season was. It was about a bunch of different guys finding their niche and doing it perfectly.
And the one last category of our season awards, this isn't so much of an award as a badge of shame. It's the walk of shame here, and that would be what the biggest disappointment of 2015 was, aside from that we're talking players. And we've actually got ourselves quite a few choices. If you're looking at the candidates for the biggest disappointment, I'm going to say it's on the lowest scale. You might see the play of Just Bethel down the stretch because there were so much... considering how much talk early in the season was, oh, we need to put Bethel. And like we kept saying, guys, Powers is better at cornerback. That's why he's starting. We could say Jonathan Cooper. You could definitely say Alex Okafor. Sean Weatherspoon, because of his lack of impact. Andre Ellington is another one. But if you had to pick, what was your biggest disappointment for this season? Who disappointed you the most on this team?
Jonathan Cooper, and I don't even have to think about it. Because Ted Larson sucked. But Jonathan Cooper was such a...
Sorry, Ted, if you happen to listen to this podcast. Ted, you and Brett Sowell, as much of a place in your heart as Cardinals have, you are probably not our friends.
No, I like Ted, and I vouch for Ted, like, all season. But dude struggled physically, and that's what the issue is. Physically, he's just not, you know, a great starter in the NFL. Clearly good enough to play in the NFL for, what now, 7 years, 6 years? So who cares what I have to say? But, I think that's why you have to be disappointed in Jonathan Cooper, because what was it that made him so unable to beat out Ted Larson? And, you know, I don't like to do this. I text you and I text other people, you know, confidentiality, but my sources say it had everything to do with kind of a mental thing, and whether it was lapses in protecting itself, that's disappointing, because this is year three. This isn't year one rookie stuff. This is year three, and I understand you switched to right guard, but you've been in the scheme long enough, you should know the slide and things of that nature. And the person too that I trust said it was all about pass protection and not being able to protect Palmer,
and which was, you know, the big game entering season for me. While maybe I didn't expect as much from Cooper side of the ball and Alex Okafor, and say, what in the world? He had 2 sacks in week one, and then you and I had 3 sacks he did the rest of the way. So good for us, bad for Alex Okafor. Coming off of his 8 sacks in 2014 and all the blam, and he really, the pass rush impact came down to how well he played. And yes, he got hurt, but after being back, he really wasn't on the field. And late in the season, I will give this, he did start looking better in the last couple of weeks, but for a defense that so badly needed a pass rush, the fact that they had to pick up, you know, in his 4 sacks in the last 2 seasons, and they had to turn to him instead of getting production from Alex Okafor, that was really disappointing for me.
Yeah, and I guess why I don't care is because I said since they drafted him, I didn't think he was
much more than a secondary.
Much more than like another Sam Montro. And that's not a shot. Like, dude's got a role in the NFL. I just, like, these guys get built up, and what they do is not sustainable or, you know, not really translatable. And so I think that they get built up not, you know, to their own detriment by the fans, and what ends up happening is they're just not as good as what we wanted them to be. You know, like I said, it's not his fault,
We have to definitely give a shout out to Andre Ellington for proving us all wrong than saying that he can handle a workload. Man, that's like 2 years in a row where he disappointed us in terms of production. And we will say this. In moments, he was special because he still was able to bust off and make really big, dynamic plays. But he just cannot stay healthy. And he got hurt in the first game. And then Chris Johnson gets down to the line, all right, it's Andre Ellington's turn. Like, the next play, he hurts his toe. And now he's invisible. And I don't know what they're going to expect from him next year. I do expect him to be on the team because a healthy Andre Ellington is a dynamic Andre Ellington still. But will he ever have a healthy season?
No. Because he hasn't since he was in college, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, I just don't think it's fair. So, overall, I would say, you know, how you can get a healthy season out of him is if you get 16 games and he's averaging maybe, I don't know, 8 to 10 touches a game.
And that's what he's become.
And
that's, you know... As a sixth-round pick, that's okay. But when you build it up to what he was a year, then you're like, oh, wow, he's going to have 1,500 yards rushing and 800 yards receiving, and he's going to get all the passes and all the yards and score all the touchdowns. And no, now he's just a role player on a team, and he hardly sees the field.
And not just that, but like people wanted him to be Jamal Charles, and he wasn't one, but he kind of is, too, because he's injured all the time, too, right? So. Like, I love Jamal Charles. I think he's a great player. But there's a reason these guys, you know, go late and things of that nature.
So. Let's move off from last season. Let's look at the offseason. If you're looking at the 2016 offseason, give me your top three Cardinals needs.
I think pass rusher is the easy one. The more difficult one is going to be... figuring out how to get more physical in the trenches, and then quarterback. But yeah, so. But I think pass rusher is the easy one to point out, the hardest one to fill. I think finding physicality along the offensive and defensive line is the next part, and then I think they got to find a quarterback. Like, not in terms of to replace Carson Palmer, but in terms of to be there in 2017 at the earliest and probably 2018 at the latest.
And me, I'm pushing the quarterback right to push up into the distance because, I'm not convinced, and well, probably a little bit later, but you know, I had an extra perspective, some people I've listened to, just some of my own perspective in terms of Drew Stanton. We'll talk about that later, but it was really interesting to think how a lot of our readers on RevengeOfTheBirds.com feel that they could just, you know, let Stanton go and let Matt Barkley be our backup. And now I was up to think, I'm wondering if, did he show enough? I don't think he did. I thought this year was a big year for Logan Thomas entering this season because, okay, can he progress enough to think to have the team trust that he can be a number two? Clearly he didn't. He couldn't do enough to make the Cardinals trust him to even be their number three. Matt Barkley, I don't know if the same thing. So, yeah. My big top three, yes, number one, pass rush. Number two, the right side of that offensive line. Ooh, have the bodies there and talent supposedly there. In Cooper and DJ Humphreys, but yeah, and then I say the secondary is going to be a priority this offseason. Secondary was supposedly this last season. There's going to be a lot of turnover. I'm saying of the free agents that they have in the secondary, they've got Jerrod Powers, they've got Todd Johnson, they've got Tony Jefferson. Power unrestricted. Swearinger and Jefferson are restricted. I'm saying I would predict two of those guys to be gone. And Matthew coming back on ACL, that's troubling because that was the strength of the defense. So what forces on the defensive line, especially Ken, is okay. And you can move Rodney Gunter to one side or the other. Have Xavier Will step in. bring someone else in. I'm going to, you know, obviously the linebacking core gets a boost with the pass rush. So pass rush, offensive line, right side, secondary.
So here's my thing about the right side. So they can begin to try and find guys outside of Cooper and Humphreys, can they? Like, they can't roll on a first round. Well, they're not going to for Humphreys, so let's just put that.
No.
But they can't roll Cooper yet, can they?
I don't think he can draft a Cooper replacement. That doesn't make any sense. In terms of draft cap. Here's the thing. They're going to have to find a center. They have to. I mean, they need to. If DJ Humphreys is okay, if he's, you know, Bobby Massey-like, you can roll Journey. They're going to have to bring in a veteran, you know, Ted Larson-y. That way, if Cooper doesn't play out, that they've got someone there who can at least be Ted Larson-like. Because, you know, you look at the offensive line they had this year, there were weaknesses on the right side, clearly, but still were able to have a prolific offensive season. So they weren't dreadful, but they definitely were elite. But they were a much better line than we've ever had.
Oh, yeah. So I think that when we talk about the physicality of the long line, you have to hope that Cooper and Humphreys develop. And two, I think you're going to go twofold with this one. I think you're going to draft a guard center and a sign a guard center. Or as much to the chagrin of Cardinal Nation, maybe even re-sign Ted Larson. Now, he did suck as a center. So maybe they just keep, what's his name? What's the guy?
Watford? Shipley?
Well, Shipley. AQ.
Shipley can play guard. Would they? He hasn't. As far as I'm, I don't think he's played a lot of guard. So I don't know if they could have him step in on the right side. Maybe.
So I think you can get a young guy and then keep Shipley and you okay. Here's what the, and it's not so much an issue as it is like this will be the concern. You've got Cooper who allegedly, you know, supposedly struggled with the calls and blocking scheme. Then you have DJ Humphreys, who's never played before. So can you really stick a rookie center in there? That'd be my question. But, you know, Nick Martin, here we go. I'm all for that at 29.
So. Yeah, and if he's smart enough to be able to handle the calls, that'd be fantastic. So knowing that, let's kind of go position. Actually this. Before we talk position, let's kind of go through, are there any tracks that the Cardinals need to address moving forward? Now, you had an interesting perspective on the site, and you've talked here, and that's you need to do what we need to do with Denver. They need to go all in on defense. Salary cap be damned. Push money so that you can make a dynamic so that you can Carson Palmer-proof the Cardinals in the playoffs. And, you know, first and foremost, I think there's one contract that looms large, and that's Calais Campbell, who's got one year left on his deal at about, I think, $15 million. With a cap hit of around 17. Palmer's contract, I think he can do a whole lot with, because it's already got money pushed because of his reacher last year. And then you've got some minor, I think Patrick Peterson could do a little with, maybe. But do you see that there's any contracts where they might see some cap casualties or some contracts that would be perhaps would be candidates for restructuring, that sort of thing?
So I'm cool with extending restructuring Calais and Fitz. I know they just did Fitz, but I think you can still restructure him again, right?
You'd have to extend them a year. And
yeah, that's right. Give him one more year so and make it like, you know, see if he'll do $16 million, because I think that he's owed 11.
Do 11 this year, yeah.
So up it to $16 million and do 8 over 2 years. You know, it may seem like, oh, it's what? It's $3 or $4 million. So, and then Calais, same type of thing. Extend him, you know, to maybe try to see if you can do 16, 17, 18 million over 2 years. You know, everybody's got to be in on this. And that was something that Denver was able to do, even with Peyton Manning. They got all of them to kind of buy in. And so...
Well, and Peyton has almost gotten all his money back.
Yeah.
If they win the Super Bowl, he gets all of his $19
million. And I don't know how that works, to be completely honest. Like, I don't know how you do that, but I think the hard thing is going to be a couple of names. Obviously, Calais Campbell. Another one's Michael Floyd. This may not, you know, make sense to people because you're like, oh, you got him at a team-friendly $7.5 million deal or whatever. But you've got, between him and Fitz, it's nearly $20 million, right?
In fact, like, I think it is $20 million because I think Fitz's cap hit is around 13.
Yeah, so, and I don't know if these are accurate. I'm on Sport Track right now, so I'm going through them. It says Fitz's cap hit is 15.8. I don't know if that's accurate. Maybe something, this app or something. Maybe that's supposed to be his salary. But anyways, I think you try and cut one of the Coreys. I know my friend is a rip of one of them, but you know, you gotta make money somewhere. I think everybody kind of at the bottom of the roster can afford to get rid of guys. Xavier Williams.
Well, you don't save any money getting rid of guys that were undrafted free agents. Those are the cheapest guys in the world.
So the other names that are interesting, because that's the thing, they don't really have a lot of options. I think they're going to have to push Vel here for some money down the line. I don't know what's going on with Darrell Washington. I know he still counts against the cap. Can they fill his money?
Yes, because he doesn't count anything. Okay. As he's suspended, he doesn't count because he's not being paid. So he doesn't count anything right now. Once reinstated, okay, so that's when he jumps back on, and his contract was told. So wherever contract was set when he suspended, it starts over at point. And so, no, he'll as soon as they can get some signing bonus money back.
Right, yeah, that's the main thing. So the other ones that are interesting are, can you push Upati down the line? And
because he was cap friendly.
Yeah, and so like that's what you got to do. You got to, because they're only going to have like $25 million,
right?
And as constructed, you know, I'm not sure that they're better than Carolina, and I think that they're still that coin flip of Seattle. So they got to find a way to make improvements, you know. So and you're not going to get an improvement by continuing to fill in holes with cheap veterans, unless you get guys Michael Bennett who take a discounted 1 year rate and then, you know, play out of their mind, like, and then sign a bigger contract the next year, like he did with Seattle. So those are the those are the kind of moves I think you got to try to make. I mean, even if you end up pushing Palmer down the line a little more into 19. You got to create a way to bring on help on the defense, because I don't think, like we said earlier, I don't think there's anything you can do on the offense outside of maybe a veteran swing guard center, but everything else I think has to stay as is. I think the biggest thing would be they can re-sign Chris Johnson, team-friendly deal. Defensively, you've got to get more physical and get some impact players. Defensive line, clearly at outside linebacker in the pass rush, and you have to get a safety or re-sign two safeties, and you have to get another corner. And so I think all that, you know, clearly some of it's going to be addressed in the draft, but I think all of that is going to be available in free agency. So I think going big and trying to, you know, kind of make this 2007 or 2016-2017, you know, window work important.
So let's look at each position kind of quickly. Where do they need to upgrade? We don't targets in the draft, the free agency. You know, in each position, do they need to upgrade of the free agents in that group? Who are you willing to let go? And let's start at the quarterback position. I don't think you can really upgrade. You have to think about future, maybe. But Drew Stanton is a free agent. I am of the opinion that in terms of backups, you're not going to do much better than Drew Stanton. Unless you feel that the cheap Matt Bark can fill in as well as a Stanton, then you have to bring him back, and he's going to cost probably $4.5 million. That's the number that I heard. And now I wrote about it. I think, I would imagine he will come back because his choice is to come back good backup money or to go to a crappy quarterback position. Go to a crappy team with a quarterback problem. You're like going to a Cleveland. You're going to a Houston. Any of those bad quarterback situations. And I don't think he wants to start in the right situation, especially since he was in those type of situations and got released by a pick. I see him coming back. I could picture him being given a 3-year deal, honestly.
Yeah.
But he could serve as perhaps.
So give me Barkley and a rookie. That's just my opinion.
Okay. And I think Palmer, you're set for 2016, and then you really have to start after next, and we really have to start thinking hard about the future this year.
Honestly, I think you have to look at it as he's your answer for 16 and 17. He has to be, because if he's not for 17, I don't know if there's a quarterback they can take unless Carson to 29. I do like Connor Cook, but I don't, you know, we'll get into that later. I don't know if there's a quarterback that they can get at 29 or, you know, anywhere in the draft that you're going to be comfortable going with them instead of Palmer in 17 even.
Look at the running backs. Do we need to upgrade at running back? I don't see any real upgrades needed. I think who they have on the roster right now is Johnson as a free agent. Bring him back if he's willing to take a limited role and be a veteran guy. Otherwise, they're going to need to bring a veteran of some sort that, you know, can be a locker room guy.
I think you have to have one vet just of the injury proneness of one Andre. So as much as we all win, I don't want him to be the guy that has to carry a load if, you know, knock on wood, anything happens to David Johnson.
And Steph, to his, you know, he's veteran-like now, but I want a veteran who could come in and be at least a little bit productive.
Yeah, and Steph is going to probably still be on the roster. He might be up. Is he up here or is he next year?
He's like Ellington. That's the same year. So Ellington and Stephon enter the last year of his deal. He's super valuable. So they're bringing Robert Hughes back. Keeps back. I think it'll be Hughes and Taylor kind of duking it out for that particular, you know, pass blocker special team. Guy.
Yeah, so in that case, yeah, I just think you have to have CJ back if he can get you, if you can get him on a similar deal to what he was this year.
Receiver. There's really nothing they need to do to upgrade. I mean, there's some cap number things, but between Fitz and Floyd and Brown and Nelson, Jerron Brown's restricted free agent. Do you tender him? I don't.
No. And here's why. Because you're going to draft one. So
that's always true. They're going to draft another receiver because that's what Bruce Arians does.
My early guess, and since we don't have the combine yet, my early guess is going to be Jalen Marshall out of Ohio State because he's a guy that probably two-, three-round pick if he would have went back. He's a running back that moved to wide receiver. He's 5'11 and like 205, so he's like a thick wide receiver as opposed to the normal BA type, and allegedly he's going to run 4.42.
Interesting. I think it was Keim who said that they want to look for another Fitz. I don't know if they mean all-star, you know, hype. I don't think they mean that, but I think to fill his role, which is essentially, and I've told this to a few people, and I say it with all the respect in the world, tight end, the way that like Dallas uses Jason or New Orleans would use you know, Jimmy Graham. He becomes a tight end type receiver who can also put those underneath medium intermediate routes, who's also willing to block.
Right, and so that's your whole. And Marshall's a physical dude. Like I said, he was a running back, so that might be a type that can play in the slot and do different things. You know, or maybe Michael Floyd moves. I don't know. After you know Fitz graduates to the broadcast booth,
or decide. I don't. What is that? That's a good question. What would Fitz do after that? Tight end. It's an interesting one. The only thing I think they're missing. They need to bring some veteran of some sort in, whether it's just to handle during camp. Because I guess they already have sort of a good group of what they, you know, what Arians wants to do is tight end. Because they got Fells, they got Nicholas, they get Moma back if he recovers from his injury, and they get Gerald Christian. Those are a lot of young guys, kind of like this year. Bringing in Gresham this year was a really good thing for that room. But I think they're going to need to bring in a vet of some sort, whether he... battle what you kind of to does he competes with Moma and Christian for the basically back spot.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think you want to see just a vet. I don't think Gresham's back. I think he wants to get into an offense that'll let him play the, you know, an actual tight end position.
Yeah.
As opposed to the Arians tight end position, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, like, let the guy go do what he wants. Hold on, I'm pulling it up right now. God, this is ugly. Benjamin Watson, maybe. Oh, they're going to go after Dwayne Allen, since or from Indianapolis. That's my guess. Going to go after Dwayne Allen.
That'd be a perfect match. Offensive line here. I think we've already addressed this, and that's the right side. I think they're more or less. I mean, they need someone. I think somehow or another, Bradley Sal's going to be on this team again because that's life. Bradley Sal's got to be a Cardinal. But they do need a vet. They do need to, since you don't want to have to count on Cooper and Humphreys, you're gonna want to have a swing guard tackle. Or a swing guard, sir, to be able to fill in should the combo of Shipley, Cooper, or Hump work out.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. You know, I don't know if you can do anything on the offensive line other than, like we said, a vet right there.
Ted Larson, say goodbye. You had a good 2 years here, or you had a 2 years here, so... Ted Larson, say goodbye. Bradley Sal, I thought, you know, there was no way he was going to, but he's, you know, I don't know. Is he gone? But is he going to be back? Because, dadgummit, he's BA's guy.
And he's like a cockroach. Everybody else. Well,
and he's a good, and he got to have on the bench. Just keep him on the bench.
Yeah.
Now, look on the defensive line. We've really got, I mean, they're really sort of rotationally, they're set. Frosty, they don't really have agents on the defensive line for their year, although his extension was essentially about giving him money last year. Corey Redding got another year left. Corey Peters got 2 years left. Josh Moore, I believe, is an exclusive rights guy. So he's, you know, if the Cardinals want him, he'll be back, and he'll be. There really isn't anyone on that line other than maybe Corey Redding. You say Gracias, and maybe he decides to retire. Frosty, I still think he's too good to just kick him to the curb. Although, maybe that's when you do it. You sort of let Morrow take more of a full-time role and bump Gunter over, and hopefully with a healthy Corey Peters, you can have the nose tackle rotation with him and Xavier Williams. And then they'll end up drafting a guy, too, so.
Yeah, and... I don't know. I think they're going to address the defensive line in the draft to go after a big name. I know it's not going to happen, and I shouldn't care, but I'd like to see them go after a, you know, big-time defensive lineman, you know, that can play in that four or that 3-4. Obviously, Muhammad Wilkerson's a name I've brought up. They're not going to do it, but, man, that would be fun.
Yeah, that it most certainly would. At linebacker... At outside linebacker, get somebody, please. Rainey, why not bring? He wants to come back and come back because he was barely playing any significant. He was playing passing snaps. After that, I mean, do they? Oh, that's an interesting question with how things ended up down the stretch. Golden, I think, this, as soon as he stays healthy, he can be what Okafor was or two. And then you need somebody. Then no one on that. So you can say, oh, can just let him go by because they're just not good enough there at all.
Yeah, so here's where the dilemma is, right? There's not really any available.
There never is.
And so you have to find a way to draft one that can be an impact player, or you have to continue to build the defensive line so the impact of the outside linebacker doesn't matter. So here's the name I'm going to throw out there. We can talk about it in another show. Alden Smith.
He's been fantastic in Oakland, and all of his problems disappeared.
He's also going to get suspended, I think.
Oh boy!
So that's what you got to figure out. But he's an unrestricted free agent, and he's only 26 years old.
Yeah, and when he's on the field,
There's what, five better, you know, pass rushers in the league.
Yeah,
maybe 10, but I mean he's up there. But yeah, on the field part, that's
so an inside linebacker. We've got. I think we're all gonna be okay with Sean Weatherspoon going. After that, you've got Minter with 1 year left. You've got Buchanan, who's sort of a safety, sort of a linebacker. If they're gonna continue to play Buchanan there significantly, even as just basically playing that position, the role he had his rookie year, and then taking the Tyrann Mathieu idea, he slides between the two positions. They still need somebody for base, and I don't think Sean Weatherspoon's that guy. I don't know Lonnie Foo is that guy. I don't want to count on an undrafted guy. So I think they have to somebody at inside linebacker. Have to.
Yeah, and there's an intriguing name. Bruce Irvin's ones I've brought up. I like him. So, you know, whatever.
I mean, that's the one thing. He obviously has played in a 3-4, and he's played more, was it more 3-4-3 outside. Does he translate well to the inside, or am I overstating that change?
I think you are not overstating it, but I think we are at a point where it doesn't really matter because they just have to get somebody in there to impact the game. Obviously, you could get a guy like Derek Johnson from Kansas City that's been there, done that, super effective, but he's old and he's, you know, broken down. Shay McClellan is another name to watch. He's made the transition. He's been a better player, and I say that very hesitantly. Maybe just a change of scenery, and then you probably won't see get available, and that's guys like Danny Trevathan from Denver, and then Rolando McClain from Dallas. So, I mean, it's going to be tough because there are options that are pure inside backers, and there are options of guys that have played in 3-4 inside linebacker positions. The question is, who's going to be available? McClellan's an interesting name to watch going forward.
And yeah, that the guy to look at. Look at the secondary. I'm going to bunch up the secondary because, there could be some change there. Jarrod Powers unrestricted, Rashad Johnson unrestricted, and DJ Swearinger restricted. I don't think, writing on the wall, I don't think Powers or Shad come back. And I say that only because of this. I think Rashad Johnson is going to get paid way more than the Cardinals can afford to keep him. The numbers he's put up the past couple of years, and he was on a cheap deal. When he re-signed with the Cardinals 3 years ago, I think it was like 3 years, $4.5 million. He deserves to get paid top safety money, even with some of the limitations. He's one of the smartest guys. He's super productive. and he's a coach on the field. That said, he's super important. I don't think I can afford to keep him. That's got to have to be Deion next year and Tony Jefferson. And I think you would, at least at safety, I think you roll the dice with DJ and Tony. And if you keep a guy, it's Jerod. But I don't think he can, you know, when you pay Justin Bessel $5 million a year, you're saying he's going to start at cornerback. But they do need to pick up, I think, one veteran. Well, not necessarily veteran, but younger, older player in the secondary.
Yeah, and the first name I came up with was Sean Smith, because he fit what they were talking about at the cornerback position. Long, mean, fast, all that good stuff. I think he's like 6'2". So that's a name to watch. Prince Amukamara, local guy, another name to watch. They're both going to get paid $9+ million. So you have to take those names with a grain of salt. Another interesting name that they could pick up probably cheap is a Morris Claiborne out of Dallas, who is going to be coming off a gruesome knee injury. So you could probably get him on a one-year prove-it deal. Obviously, the LSU connection helps with that, so they might have a little insight. From there, it's a bunch of mishmash. I mean, Janoris Jenkins is interesting, if not inconsistent. Tremaine Johnson, same thing. Josh Robinson is a weird dude, but he can play a little bit. You know, I don't think they're going to bring in an Adam Pac-Man Jones type. So, and I think Leon Hall is going to cost too much money. So, it's going to be tough. The interesting safety name, and I don't think it's going to happen, but just kind of to your point of need / veteran presence is Eric Weddle. And I don't know more, because he's gotten paid so much and he's 31, that maybe he wants to go a different route in his life now. Let's see, he's earned, you know, $45 million over the last 9 years. But you can't fault these guys if they want to go get more money. He's 31.
Get that money, guys.
Yeah, he's 31. Maybe getting into 15 or, you know, probably 3 years, $30 million more important to him than signing a, you know, 2 year, $15 million deal in Arizona and playing for a championship over the next 2 years. But that's an interesting fit to what you were just talking
and
about.
And we look at the special teams. Obviously, long snapper is a need. They don't have one. Mike Leach retired. And that's weird. I mean, we have to think of a long snapper. Now look at the specialists. You've got kicker, punter. Do the Cardinals try to upgrade Butler? Wait, you know, he actually did well down the stretch. Caro? Yeah? Good kicker? Inconsistent extra point kicker? Kickoff's okay? I don't know. Are they going to try and bring someone else in? Or, you know, Amos Jones, as long as he's on staff, I think Butler's his guy. So I don't know if they're going to try and do anything other than the token kicker / punter they bring in camp to be the third guy to take some reps.
Yeah, and I don't think you're going to get anything else right now. Unless they are concerned about Catanzaro. But, I don't think you're going to get anything else right now.
And returners. Obviously, you've got guys on the roster. Do you see a need to improve, to look outside for the return positions? I think with J.J. Nelson and Patrick Peterson and David Johnson, you want to see first and foremost J.J. Nelson be a kickoff return. As long as he's in that, and Patrick punts, I'm not a big fan of that. Patrick was solid okay this year on punt. I don't see a need to upgrade it. Really, he can be the guy at one of those positions next year.
One name to watch
Ted Ginn. Oh, wait, no.
Yeah. No, he's only good when he doesn't play here. No, actually, sorry, two names to watch. Both from Alabama. Cyrus Jones, he's a nickelback, dimeback in this defense, and an impact return man. Another name to watch, if they decide to try to find a upgrade / clone of Andre Ellington, and you know, a lesser but similar style player to David Johnson, is Kenyon Drake out of Alabama.
Yeah, but you know, I listened to your podcast about that, and I've got, you know, as much as people talk like that show completely turned me off to him, because he couldn't, you know, you guys brought up the fact that Nick Saban is a rotation running back guy, and even he didn't get any carries.
Right, but he can catch the ball, but he can also return kicks and punts. So I'm just talking about in that vein of things. Those are interesting names to watch. But yeah, Drake is funny. People like him, but he's really great at Alabama.
But so we've kind of talked about everything. We've gone over wars. We've gone over positions. We've gone over contracts. I think we've wrapped up this one, you know, just a little bit longer. Been good about we're hitting about 110, so hopefully y'all stayed with us. I'm not quite sure how we're going to handle the next few weeks, but at minimum, we will have a free agent preview show. We'll talk about the free agencies available. We might have something between now and then. Between Seth's got some stuff going on, and what I might try to do as we start moving forward, for one of our Cardinals players, I might can get him, one of our new young guys, signed a future contract. Going to try and get him on as an interview. So hopefully we do that over the next few weeks. So I think we come to a wrap, Seth. Anything else you need to talk about or want to talk about on the show?
No, I think we hit it all. I look forward to getting some more draft stuff out there. We'll try it up. We've got a Senior Bowl recap coming tonight or tomorrow from Draft Breakdown Podcast, so you guys can kind of get our thoughts on those guys. There are definitely some names to know, and no, Spence is not going to be available unless Jess flies to Indianapolis and spikes his urine sample. So don't ask.
Actually, we might. There's the possibility. It won't be me, but I could have someone else who, from the staff who lives out there, who might actually be able to be at the combine as media there. So maybe we can do that.
Yeah, Noah Spence won't be available, Cardinals fans. So get that thought out of your mind now. But yeah, there's definitely some interesting prospects to talk about from the Senior Bowl. And then if you follow me on Twitter, I'm figuring out how to Vine, which is fun /
vining,
/ unfulfilling. But you can get a glimpse of some of what these prospects can do. So and I know how to copy people's vines now, so that's the most important thing. So I don't have to do all the work. I'll just I follow the right people. So
sounds good. Make sure you're listening to Seth's Draft Breakdown Podcast. iTunes or on SoundCloud. Those are the two ways I know how to get a hold of it. If you're not subscribed to this show, Revenge of the Birds Radio, shame on you. Subscribe on iTunes. You know, everyone's on iPhones and all that. So you subscribe there. You can follow us on RevengeTheBirds.com, Stitcher Radio, and coming soon to Google Play. Other than that, go to RevengeTheBirds.com, join the site if you're not already a member, become a Cardinals fan, talk to us up on Twitter, at Revenge of Birds, or Facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. That's a wrap for this show. We'll talk to you guys later.
Have a good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going at thebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.